Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's the Bad Hair Day Podcast with your buddy and mine, Marshall Kirkpatrick. Marshall, how's your hair?
My hair is doing great, Dave. Thanks for asking.
I got a haircut myself.
It's a mess. Oh yeah?
My hair is a mess. I mean, you know, even when I get a haircut these days, my hair is pretty bad. So I'm wearing a hat.
Oh, is that cheating on the Bad Hair Day podcast?
Yeah, I think it kind of is. But there is nobody else here in the room, so, you know, I can get away with it. You know?
Yeah, they can't see.
No. Oh, no. You know what? You need to close that window, Marshall.
Yep, just did. Technology. Sometimes it goes over my head, Dave.
It's part of my checklist here is to make sure all those windows are closed. That's the first time I've actually heard it on my partner's. So anyway, our guest tonight is Joe Hewitt, but hold on. Joe's here. Marshall, you ready?
I sure am. Bring him on.
Well, he's a 408 number. You got to figure that's Joe because he lives in Santa Cruz. Hello. Is that Joe?
This is Joe.
Hey, Joe. How you doing? Thanks for calling into Bad Hair Day.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Hey, you're the man of the hour. Is, like, today the biggest day of your life?
it's interesting, for
yeah.
Sure, that getting all this attention all at once, yeah.
How much attention are you getting?
Not so much me personally, but, you know, the app is
mm-hmm.
It's all over the place. So I'm trying to, you know, take it all in and listen to, you know, I'm scraping all the blogs and Twitter and Facebook for bug reports and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, so you said you can only have 100 beta testers.
Yeah, that's the limit for all developers, all iPhone
really?
Developers.
So how many users do you think you have right now?
Last I checked, we've got about 12 million active users. That's monthly actives. And
12 million of the iPhone app?
12 million, yeah. out of about, you know, what are there, about 40, 45 million iPhones and iPod Touches, I think, that Apple's sold, something like that.
Marshall, what do you think of that?
I'm in shock. I'm amazed and pleased as can be. I'm one of those millions and quite happy about it. So congratulations on the launch today, Joe.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looks really good. So what was it like developing for the, you know, this 12 million user app?
Well, it's you know, it's a lot of pressure, and there's certainly no shortage of people telling me how it should be. Although, you know, I have a lot of freedom at Facebook. That's one
mm-hmm.
nice thing about it. They've let me kind of build the app that I want to build. So I'm really just kind of, you know, serving the users and trying to make something that feels familiar to them from the website
mm-hmm.
while at the same time tailored to the phone.
Well, tell us about what it does. So what is the Facebook for the iPhone? What does it do? How does it work?
I'd say the most important thing that it does is it lets you get into the Facebook newsfeed and, you know, see, and post status updates and comment on things your friends have done and
mm-hmm.
post photos. That's probably the most common thing people are going to do with the app. But it also gives you access to, you know, maybe I'd say 80%, maybe 75% of the entire Facebook website, from the inbox to, you know, your notes, your events. There's so much stuff inside Facebook, you know, that building it all, re-implementing the front end for all those features on the iPhone is a lot of stuff in there.
But it seems a lot simpler than the website. No, I mean
that it. Yeah, maybe it, who knows? Maybe it's an illusion because it's in a small.
maybe, yeah.
You know, the
website. I always
website
find it hard to find what I want to do in the website. You know, it's sort of like I think of the task that I want to do, and then I figure it's in, you know, unless I'm really lucky, it's going to take me, you know, quite a bit of hunting to figure out, you know, where it is. But I didn't feel that way at all with this app. It immediately felt, you know what, it felt like, it felt to me like Twitter with a whole bunch more features. That's what it felt like to me.
You know, I really wish that I had a Twitter app that was so smooth and such a pleasure to use.
There's so many great Twitter apps out there, though. I mean, Twitter has no shortage of good iPhone apps. I'm always juggling which one I use. I keep switching because good ones keep coming out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Joe, how do you explain? Oh, go ahead.
No, you go, Marshall.
Well, I am curious what Twitter app Joe uses.
Lately, I've been using Birdfeed. I was using Tweety and then Twitterific, and they all have their strengths. I can't really say that any one is like my favorite. They're all kind of equal, but I've been using Birdfeed lately. I tend to be more of a stalker on Twitter than a poster. You know, I'll post, you know, once or twice a week, or a lot more on these days when people are talking about my product. But I'm not that active on Twitter as an author.
So what's the difference between Twitter and Facebook? I mean, you work for Facebook, right? But you're an active Twitter user, right?
Oh, a semi-active Twitter user. I mean, Twitter has a different audience than there's just a kind of a different community on Twitter, you
mm-hmm.
know, and it's just, you know, I'm not going to not, you know, reach out to that audience because I work for Facebook. So that's really why I'm on there. I don't really talk about personal stuff on Twitter too much. I sort of see it as a way to talk about my work.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty refreshing, actually, because, you know, a lot of times developers just sort of figure, well, I should just stay within the confines of the, you know, community that I work for. But, you know, getting out there, I mean, would you say that you, like, your application, your iPhone app was influenced by Twitter or by some iPhone clients for Twitter? You pick up any ideas from those guys? Or?
Probably. Let's see. One thing that I stole from Tweety is that I really liked is they have this refresh button is part of the page, and you kind of scroll to the top. They were the first app I ever saw do that, and I was having such a hard time figuring out where to squeeze the reload button. I didn't want to have to put it on the toolbar because, you know, real estate on toolbars is so limited, and that was a really good solution. So
it was totally intuitive. I mean, I did not spend any time looking for that because, like, it was right there, you know? I mean, before I could even think about, you know, wanting that feature, I was already looking right at it.
Yeah, I have to thank Tweety for that one. Mostly the app is, I really try to stay true to the Facebook website design. You know, there are a few places like the launcher, which, you know, present a really concise, organized view of the entire app. And that, I think, is probably what you're saying helps you to feel like it's a simpler experience because everything is right there in one view. Whereas on Facebook, it's kind of spread out all over the place.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, it feels like an integrated whole, you know. And it's good. You know, it's like got a backbone to it, and then there are some things hanging off of it. Of course, the thing I really like is that, like, the pictures are integrated right in, you know, you don't have to click on a link to see the picture, which, you know, seems kind of obvious that it should work that way. But Twitter, you know, here we are in year three of Twitter, and it still isn't doing that, you know. And so my hope is that you guys start, you know, there starts to be some creative, you know, competition back and forth here, that you, you know, put out something like this that I think is going to appeal to a lot of Twitter users, probably because a lot of Twitter users use the iPhone, and until now, I don't know, I mean, you probably know a lot better, but I don't think there have been all that many Facebook users that are also iPhone users. I mean, did you have 12 million users before today for the earlier Facebook app?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 12 million users was as of last week before the app came out.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Actually,
the old app was really good.
The old app was the most popular iPhone app. According to Apple, it was the most downloaded app of 2008. So it's been pretty popular.
Okay.
I actually think, looking at our stats,
I thought you were saying before that you had gotten 12 million users in the last 3 hours.
Oh.
That's what I was hearing, and I was going, man, that's like that pretty would, unprecedented.
Oh, yeah, that would be crazy. I don't think Apple servers could handle that.
Is that where it comes from? The downloads come from Apple servers, not from your server?
Yeah, as far as I know, they come from the same server that serves their iTunes, you know, MP3.
So you don't have to, like, add any server bandwidth or anything like that to do this. You're just part of their whole system?
That's right, yeah. Go ahead.
I want to ask another question. It's like, is there any integration or interesting integration between Facebook on the iPhone and the iPhone itself? Because I know, like, on the BlackBerry, my friend Dave Jacobs was telling me about how he uses Facebook on the BlackBerry, and so when you get a call, if that person who's calling is a friend of yours on Facebook, you'll see the picture from Facebook. You know, it'll pop
right
up on the screen. So I'm just, and I thought, wow, that's pretty, you know, that's nice integration, right? Will I see that in on my iPhone now that I have Facebook installed?
That's actually a feature on our roadmap. We've wanted to do, there are some devices, I think Palm and I think Android now does a full contactless synchronization between Facebook. We haven't been able to do that with the iPhone yet for various reasons.
Is that because
there's a bunch of developers that are doing that and selling Facebook integrated iPhone contact lists?
They cannot actually get at the phone numbers and addresses or email addresses through the API. They can't do that, and they're not doing it. We have some relationships with trusted partners like I think Palm, where we give it to them, but only under a contract where they are very careful about storing it on the phone in a secure way, so it can't be leaked out. Because our terms of service are very clear about the fact that you don't own your friends' phone numbers; they own it, so you can't just copy it to your hard drive or your phone, because then they couldn't get it back. So it's not really a technological limitation so much as it is a terms of service issue.
You don't want Palm pulling a Scobel, if you will. Yep. What's the big picture? How do you describe the transition from the last version to this version?
The first goal was just to catch up with the website, because the last version, I think, came out in October of last year, and since then we've changed the website quite a bit. You know, we added the like feature in that time. We changed the newsfeed completely. So there was that, and then the second thing was just to add features that were missing, like events and notes and better, more complete photo management. I feel like I'm kind of chasing the website. The website, you know, we have a whole group of people doing the website, and they add all kinds of cool stuff every month or so, and it's my job to re-implement that for the iPhone.
And events now include birthdays, which is awfully nice.
Yeah, birthdays, yes.
Because what better to do when you have a few free moments than to check and see which of your friends have birthdays and send them quick birthdays.
Yeah.
I really like that, and I really like the fact that I now have a one-click button to see how my wife is feeling on the homepage of my Facebook.
How did you do that, Marshall?
There's a real simple feature called add a favorite, and that's essentially a method to put a shortcut with the person's avatar right on your little Facebook dashboard, which you can then drag around and put wherever you want. So now just below my newsfeed is a picture of my wife, and I can just click that and load her profile and wall immediately.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was the same. I implemented that because I was always using the app to check my girlfriend, and I have a fan page for my dog, and we post like pictures of her from the road. So it's such a pain to find it digging through the friends list, so that's kind of a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So your dog has a fan page?
Yeah, well, you know, she has 30 fans.
Should I have a fan page, do you think?
Yeah, why not? I mean, there's a...
Well, I don't really understand what it is. I mean, what a fan page would do for me.
The main thing it does is allows you to have more than 5,000 people following you.
And do I have to follow them, or is it
no,
just one way?
No, it's one way.
I see. So your dog doesn't follow everybody that's interested in what's going on with the
right,
dog?
Right, right. She doesn't follow anyone.
No.
Guess
that would
be
one of
those guys.
Yeah, pages can't follow anyone back. They can only be followed.
I see. Interesting.
So, Joe, I've got a couple of questions about things that aren't in the app yet. And the first is push. I know there's a lot of people who are wondering if there will be any push features, what they might be, what kind of magic you could work with that, since what's already there is so good so far. But what do you think?
Yes, we are working on push, and I think I've said this before publicly. I plan to have it in the next update, 3.1. There might be a 3.01 before that, but it'll be in the next major update, and it'll be notifications, the same kind of notifications you get on the website. You know, if someone wrote on your wall or you have a new message, that kind of thing. I probably won't right off the bat give you chat notifications.
Mm-hmm. Any chance that we could have super granular control over that and say just get push from certain lists of activity from certain lists of friends?
Yes, definitely. If you've ever used Facebook's SMS notifications, we already have a pretty granular system for letting you control what you get via SMS. And you can, you know, actually set that up on an iPhone right now if you don't mind your SMS bill going through the roof. So it's going to be the same level of control over whose notifications you see and what categories of notifications you see.
Oh, that's great. Good. Dave, have you got any more questions about push?
No. I mean, that did come up. And Joe, we had a thread that I opened up on my blog asking, people asked some questions. So there was a whole thread on that, but I think that more or less covers it. They wanted me to ask questions about some of my pet technologies, but I don't want to go there because I want to see and I keep the focus right on Facebook for this. You know, we tend to talk about Twitter a lot on this show, and we always want to talk about Facebook. Today we're going to do Facebook, so not other stuff.
What kinds of technologies are powering the updates on this app, Joe?
You mean like what code? What kind of frameworks am I using?
Yeah.
Well, one of the big things that I did in this project was I open sourced a lot of the code, and I sort of forked the project into this open source project called 320 that's hosted on GitHub. So a lot of the user interface controls, like the photo viewer and the email, the message controller, all those things are out there, and there are actually a lot of apps on the store already using it. So that's a nice way that I can not only share, you know, the work I've done, but get, you know, feedback and improve the quality of my code through the magic of open source.
Is there any RSS in here anywhere? In Facebook in your app?
I don't believe there is. No, there's the only thing I could say that you might find RSS is if you, you know, find it to an embedded link in the web browser.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the question comes up with the friend feed acquisition. That, of course, that's what their focus has been on, right, is, you know, integrating all these sort of open, you know, all these sources that come through the feed world, right? And so the, you know, question or curiosity is that, does this mean, you know the question, is like Facebook going to open up? And, you know, how many different ways can that question, you know, can you ask that question?
Well, we do. I believe we do have RSS feeds on Facebook. You can get your status updates through an RSS feed.
So I could hook a feed into Facebook. Is that right?
It's not.
You can get your own, perhaps, but. You certainly can't get your friends' updates by RSS, and there's no on my own profile page. There's no feed being detected by my browser. There's been a number of people who've built apps to extract feeds of all my.
Didn't they get shut down though at some point?
They got shut down. Yeah.
Yeah, they got shut down.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you can only get your own. It really just comes down to this sort of contract we've made with the users that their stuff's going to be private and can't be copied.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bytes of your updates can't be copied out of the Facebook, you know, ecosystem into some other format. And maybe it seems like we're trying to lock the data down, but it really comes down to users, the expectations we set for users.
Yeah.
Their stuff's not going to be, we're going to protect their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sort of raises the question about a simpler Facebook. I mean, that was sort of the tantalizing thing, you know. My one sentence review of this app was that I wished that the, you know, the desktop application was see what I say. I wish the desktop version of Facebook was this simple, fast, and elegant. It's sort of like, you know, we talked about this yesterday, you know, this idea that, you know, wouldn't it be nice if there was a Facebook that was as approachable as something like Twitter, you know, as simple. And you know, Twitter is very open because everybody's, you know, everybody's feed, although they don't call it a feed in Twitter, but everybody's feed is actually a feed. So, for example, we were able to create an OPML output from a user's, you know, all the people that they follow, and each one of those is a feed, and then import that into Google Reader, and all of a sudden, with absolutely no coordination at all between Twitter and Google, all of a sudden Google Reader is a Twitter client. And so you get this kind of serendipity when, you know, an application, I mean, you understand what I'm saying, right, Joe? I mean, we're not like, you know, we're sort of, I mean, this isn't a strange idea, right? So the question sort of is when you're looking at, you know, at Facebook on the iPhone, it is so tantalizingly simple and easy, and you just wonder, could there be a Facebook that was that simple?
Perhaps. It's the iPhone app is really what the same as Facebook. If you just kind of hide the column on the left, the column on the right, and the bar on the bottom.
That's a lot of hiding you have to do there, isn't it?
Yeah. it's that middle column, basically, mm-hmm. is the entire app, and everything else is tucked away on the home screen. Mm-hmm. Works well on an iPhone. I don't know if we can necessarily, I mean, we're trying various things to get to that simplicity for sure.
But there were all these great ideas in, you know, in friend feed. And, you know, you know, we're sort of just sitting out here reading the tea leaves on this, trying to figure out what, you know, what does this mean, you know? And that, you know, Facebook has picked up, or at least this is what people say, is Facebook's picked up ideas from friend feed over the last, you know, few iterations. There seems to be sort of a love affair between Facebook and friend feed. And so it sort of looks from the outside point of view, it's like, okay, you're having a love affair and you guys just decide to get married. And so, you know, now the question sort of, how much of this, you know, I mean, there's all these things that were in friend feed that have not made it into Facebook yet. And all that is the feed, you know, sort of culture, that there should be ways in and out. I guess you said that is something that you guys aren't going to do because the user's data, because of the contract with the user.
Well, we may. I mean, we're considering, you know, giving users the freedom to open that up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not the guy to talk about what direction we might go in that particular area.
Yeah, I think that privacy and openness and publicness and things like that are awful big thorny issues with Facebook. And
yeah,
to be honest, I personally don't really buy the story of maintaining the expectations of users. But
what do you mean,
you know,
by that, Marshall? What does that mean?
Well, there are. That's the story, and in some ways, it's a compelling story. I got to interview Zuckerberg a couple years ago at South by Southwest, and I was totally convinced at the time of the story that increased privacy builds trust, which facilitates greater amounts of sharing. But now there are some changes that I think run real deep that imply to me, and people at Facebook have confirmed, that there's a push towards trying to get people to be more public and less private, the users there. And I think that's contrary to people's expectations. And maybe Facebook knows best, I mean, honestly, but it's a weird conflict in my mind between the motion to push users towards being more public and less private, and yet using that privacy still as the justification for keeping user data in bulk or in aggregate or for development purposes. out of the grasp of developers.
Yeah. I mean, it is, it's other than the contact information, there's not a lot that you can't get about a user through, it's through our API, I'll give you that. It's not through RSS or any kind of a simple, you know, read-only type of a thing. You do have to jump through some hoops to get it, but, I mean, it's there, and, you know, we kind of protect ourselves by forcing you to ask the user for explicit permission using Facebook Connect for various, for, like, every little granular, like, type of data that you might ask for. And,
well, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, that's the kind of roadblock that you know, it's just like the Creative Commons folks say that Creative Commons facilitates sharing by pre-communicating the conditions under which it can occur so that you don't have to ask explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes a world of difference.
And does it just sound like the same sort of bind that you got caught in with the App Store? I mean, they might have all the same arguments. Joe, I mean, you remember, now that your app's out, I mean, has your opinion changed about the App Store process?
No, not at all.
Kind of a joke. I mean, I was sort of thinking maybe now it's...
Actually, yeah, now that it's free, I was just kidding about that.
You were just kidding? The whole thing didn't matter, right?
Yeah, well, I was just trying to get them to release it, and they did.
So now that's all over and everything's cool, right? Yeah. So
tell
us about what you actually said. I don't want to try to paraphrase it. What did you say in the piece about the App Store?
I feel very strongly that the app review process doesn't really benefit the users, just because, I mean, I'm the guy who wrote this app. I should be deciding when it's done, and I'm the one who has to fix bugs in it. Mm-hmm. Apple has a very short amount of time to look at the app and decide whether it's good or not. So that's why I'm not really convinced that what they're looking for in those 6 minutes or whatever they have is there to protect the users from issues. I think it's more some kind of internal standards that they have for what kind of apps they want on the store. And, you know, it's their prerogative to do that. But when I go on the App Store and I look at what's on there, I don't feel like they're really filtering out a lot of, you know, low quality apps. They let just about everything through. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when you come out with the 3.0.1 update? Do you have to go through that process all over again? Are they going to do another evaluation of it? And you might have So you can't make any changes at all to the bits of your app without going through that process again.
That is correct. Although they do supposedly have a way to expedite if you have a really, really critical bug fix, you can ask mm-hmm. them to rush it through. Okay. I don't think they'll, you know, want me to do that 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, you're
going to
find a lot of bugs now because you have like millions of people, or you will have millions of people using it. So you go from 100 to, you know, let's say 2 million people in the space of a week. Now you're going to find a lot of bugs, and you might have to wait 2 or 3 weeks before you get that released, new version out.
Right. I mean, I'm going to start fixing bugs tonight. I could theoretically have a new update out tomorrow, but, you know, they're going to wait 2 weeks.
It's not like
to do it.
Exactly like being a web developer then, where you would just push your changes and the site would update. And it's a very different sort of discipline, developing.
Right,
platform.
Right.
Yeah. Does that ever make you want to go for, like, you know, Android or BlackBerry? Or, I mean, you love the iPhone so much that you're willing to do that?
I mean, I try to look at the big picture, and the big picture is that overall I'm able to develop much higher quality applications from, you know, I'm interested in Android and Palm Pre. I think they're really great platforms, but for me, the iPhone makes me feel the best about what, you know, how the quality I'm able to put together. And if, you know, that means that I have to wait 2 weeks to get stuff out, okay, that's not so bad that I would switch to another platform that has a limit that I can reach, even if it's immediate.
Why is that, Joe? I guess I'm unclear on why the iPhone is such a superior development platform over, say, Android.
You know, it may not be that superior. I mean, those platforms are moving very quickly. I'm actually really interested in Palm the WebOS platform. I wish I could clone myself and go and work on an app for Android and Palm. No, iPhone was first out of the gate, and that's what I learned. And you know, the market share numbers are so skewed right now that it wouldn't really make any sense for me to switch to those platforms until they have more users.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think the biggest advantage that they haven't overcome yet is not so much the software, but the hardware. You know, I just feel better about when I'm holding that iPhone in my hand. It feels really solid, and it makes the software feel more solid. And I haven't really found another device that I feel that way about.
Yeah, maybe the Hero when it comes out.
Maybe.
And people say lots of good things about that one. I heard Arrington switching to that. He doesn't like the iPhone anymore.
Yeah, okay. I think he did switch.
Did he?
Yeah.
That went over real big. Yeah.
So, Joe, how much communication did you have with Apple during the app evaluation process?
Pretty much none. Actually, I got a phone call from them yesterday. I guess the app finally reached the reviewers that had been in the queue, and they looked at it, and they found this one really small issue. They asked me to remove the phone icon from the friends list for iPod Touch users. You know, that makes sense. It's the right thing to do, and so I did that. And at the same time I was doing that, I threw in some other features I had built.
That's really clever.
I had been sitting there for 12 days, you know, working on the next version. Fortunately, these other features were pretty much done and ready to go. So I was like, hey, you know, why wait 2 or 3 weeks to get these?
Well, no, here's your chance, right? They're probably not even going to look, right?
Yeah, that was the only time.
But what do you think their whole? I mean, they must have some kind of a like how-to for their reviewers. I mean, I can't imagine who the reviewers actually are. Are they like, you know, people that have a lot of experience using iPhone apps, or do they have like a checklist, things that they're supposed to look for and reject them if they do this? I mean, how do they even tell them what to do? I can't. You know, it's hard
to
imagine.
We need to interview some of these people.
Have you?
Who they are?
Who's you have interviewed them? Marshall?
No, we need to.
Oh, we need to, yeah.
Yeah, good luck with that. I think they're hidden in a bunker somewhere.
I think the whole business with Phil Schiller coming out and sort of, you know, managing by hand some of the problems that they've been having, you know, some of the crazier cases, I think that it sort of indicates that there's, you know, there are people with different positions inside of Apple about this. I mean, there have to be some people who say this is, like, really holding back our market. It's just a way. I mean, they're spending money evaluating these apps, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, what do they say? 40 people are employed reviewing apps? It's not a huge amount. I'm sure they're not the most well-paid people.
That's a lot of people, though. I mean, that's like one Apple store.
Well, for all we know, they're all, you know, in some country somewhere
right.
on
it
the other side
in
of the
Burma,
world.
Yeah. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, someplace like that.
Well, I'm kind of surprised that given that the Facebook app is one of, if not the most downloaded free app on the store, that Apple didn't reach out to you and coordinate something. I mean, they do with some people. So
I don't know how to feel about that, because on one hand, I'm glad that they're treating everyone fairly, and I actually heard from a number of other developers saying, you know, they wish the app were approved quicker, but they're glad to know that they're not getting pushed aside in favor of, you know, larger companies.
Oh, I think they are. I'm sure that there are some companies that Apple is real proactive about reaching out to and communicating with, and you know, as it suits their interests.
Hmm.
I don't think it's a level playing field at all. I mean, it might be more or less, but I think there's a point there where it's not a level playing field anymore. I'm surprised. It kind of makes me wonder. You know, we've just got a handful, about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to ask about search because there's not any implementation of the search across updates and you know, the breadth of search that there is on the website now on the iPhone app.
We just launched that on the website like less than a month ago, I believe. And yeah, I definitely, I hope, I'm not, I can't promise yet, but I hope to get that into the 3.1 update. We're still working on integrating that with our API so I can do searches from the API. And I think you'll probably see that. And I'd also like to be able to let you save a search to your home screen.
Oh, that'd be great.
The same searches. So I think there's a good chance that'll make it into, if not the next update, then the one after that.
Mm-hmm. So I know that maybe that's that on that, but a number of people in the thread on Dave's blog post were curious to hear about what kinds of user behavioral research you had done in making your plans to build this new version. And what kind of observations or research could you share with us about the ways people are using the app?
I'd say the extent of my user research would be just gathering feedback online. I do occasionally, you know, reach out to people who've commented on the Facebook page or emailed me or Twitter and sort of, you know, try to get a feel for how they use the app. I haven't conducted any formal studies, but there's really no shortage of opinions coming at me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah, most developers, Marshall, don't do, I mean, it's not like you wear the lab coat while you're doing the development. I think it's more art than it is, you know, sort of a science.
Mm-hmm.
You try to develop a feel for how people use your product and then, you know, then show them what you've created and see how they respond and, you know, sort of like a feedback loop. Yeah,
we do have a usability lab at Facebook where we run tests on the website, and I would actually really like to get my app in there and see real people using it, but definitely don't feel like I'm not in tune with what people are doing with the app just by contacting people on the web.
So how do you feel about how Firefox has evolved? I'm switching gears pretty radically. I mean, a lot of people probably don't know that you're the one of the co-developer of Firefox, along with Blake Ross, who's also at Facebook, right?
Yes,
so
he is.
How do you feel about Firefox? They've done a good job with it at Mozilla, or things you've
really gone
like?
Back and I've gone back and forth with Firefox. I actually used Safari for a long time, and when Firefox 3.5 came out, I thought I'd give it a chance again, and I've been using it for the last month.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was really getting annoyed with Firefox on the Mac. That's really the reason I kind of stopped using it. It wasn't really living up to my expectations on the Mac. But 3.5 is a lot better, and I haven't found a major reason to switch back to Safari yet.
Well, do you ever give them any feedback, make feature requests? Is there anything that you would like love to see in Firefox that isn't there?
Yeah, I would like to see. Boy, I don't even know where.
Well, you're the right guy to ask about this stuff. I mean, you know, as a user myself, I've sort of been, you know, I keep waiting for them to put some features in the thing, you know, and there have been some, but not, you know, I mean, I got to think there's more you could do with a browser than has been done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little disappointing. I don't want to point fingers at Mozilla, but just about all the browser makers have really clung to the original Mosaic design. I think everyone's kind of itching for a new paradigm. Not that we desperately need it, but you know, the web has changed so much in the last 15 years. It seems the browser would have changed more.
Mm-hmm. So, what would you like to see?
I like to see. I think I'd really like to see the less Chrome. I guess I'm really influenced by having used the iPhone a lot and using a Kindle. I like being able to focus on the page I'm on and not feel like I'm, you know, looking at a command line or a dashboard of an airplane like Firefox or all the browsers really feel sometimes. I think that I actually feel like a lot of the things I want to be solved are going to be solved when hardware moves more towards the tablet format and away from the desktop.
Really? So you're looking forward to, like, the Apple tablet? You think
I'm looking forward to all tablets. I mean, CrunchPad,
really?
Whatever. If you had asked me about this a few years ago, I would have probably not been that super excited about a tablet. But the iPhone and Kindle have really changed me. I mean, I really like sitting down, reading on a Kindle or reading on an iPhone in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't carry my my MacBook to a breakfast place and sit there reading while I'm eating, you know, and my habits have changed. The iPhone is not is a too small a screen, and the Kindle is a crappy black and white screen.
Right.
So there's there's obviously something there, and I think while people are developing those technologies, the browser, they'll have more reason to rethink the entire browser. The Safari on the iPhone isn't really much of a reinvention of the browser, and I'm not really sure. I actually don't think Apple is going to go crazy there. I think it'll be someone else.
Hmm. So, you know, like, well, what do you think of Google Chrome? Does that look interesting to you?
Yeah, I'd like to see Google Chrome be perhaps the tablet operating system. I would love to develop for the web and just have it work on, you know, all manner of devices. It kind of sucks right now that, you know, if I want to target all the iPhone's competitors, I have to learn entirely different, you know, I've got to learn Java for Android, and I've got to learn Palm's sort of web.
Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask. So there's no compatibility at all in terms of their APIs or even, like, the developer model for the different platforms.
They're all pretty much different. So I'm kind of hoping that Chrome will, you know, maybe in 5-10 years from now, you'll have one really, like, dominating sort of iPhone-like, you know, proprietary platform, and then the other thing will be Chrome and just a complete standards-based web platform, as opposed to right now where you've fragmented between five or six different mobile.
What about netbooks? Do you have a netbook? Do you use the netbooks?
I've really yet to even, like, lay hands on a netbook. The tiny little screen and the tiny little keyboard doesn't really do it for me. I know you're.
Yeah,
I love my
netbook. I have had them ever since they came out. And I also have a Kindle, and I have an iPhone. And my conclusion is pretty close to yours. I mean, I do read on the Kindle. I'm reading a book right now. And I, you know, have a queue of them, and I'm going to keep doing it. But it is a black and white screen, and, you know, I would much prefer to read on a device that was a bigger iPhone. Would be great. But if I'm going, like, you know, take BART into the city, or if I'm going to go on a, you know, trip to Europe or something, I'll take the netbook with me. You know, and I will take the Kindle also, but the computer I want to carry is, because the battery life is so long, and because they're so small. I mean, I bought the 13-inch MacBook Pro thinking that, you know, it was time to sort of go a step up because, you know, I'd been wanting a 13-inch, you know, really great Mac, but it's too big. It's much bigger than the netbook is.
I do own a MacBook Air, and I've kind of tried using it like a netbook, but it is just slightly too big to be a netbook, I suppose.
It's also nowhere near as pragmatic as the netbook is. I mean, you know, you need if you look at the port arrangements on the netbooks, they're actually very, very well thought out. You know, you have the right, you have an Ethernet, you have three USB ports. You have the SD card reader. And Apple did that on the new MacBooks, but it protrudes, which is like...
Oh,
totally,
really?
Yeah, the card sticks out. So so now you're worried about the thing breaking off, right? And it's like, why couldn't they get that right?
Anyway. That's a shame.
Well, I have one more question. We have 90 seconds left, which is, you know, ever think about, I think one of the reasons Google did Chrome is because they, you know, they have all these web apps, right? And I think their thought is, if we also own a browser, then we can, like, you know, iterate these things closer together and create a better user experience. So do you ever think about, or not you, but does Facebook ever think about the idea of creating a browser for Facebook?
That would be interesting. I mean, all of Facebook's engineering resources are pretty much devoted to the web, and I'm really the only guy at Facebook writing a client application. So I think it would be really against our engineering culture to. Yeah, I mean, having worked on a browser, I know the huge amount of resources it takes to do that, and we've always sort of had the policy of trying to delegate that stuff off to our platform developers, give them the best tools. So if someone, like, there was that Rock Melt thing in the news. I haven't seen Rock Melt, but
you were involved with that, weren't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Apparently, I did
amazing.
Create it.
You were working on that and this iPhone app at the same time. I'm so sorry.
You're
by
a
the
really
way.
Busy it's, guy there, Joe.
Bad Marshall reporting
Marshall.
On
that. That was you. No,
we got 10
fair,
seconds.
You,
we got to say goodbye, Joe. It was a real pleasure having you on Bad
Thank
Air
you
Day.
So much for joining us.
It went so fast.
Thanks, guys.
See you soon. Okay, bye.